Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Greetings and welcome to the ID the Future podcast. This is Casey Luskin broadcasting with Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture in Seattle, Washington. On today's edition of the ID the Future podcast, we'll be discussing a response to Richard Dawkins' Information Challenge. Recently, I posted a link on evolutionnews.org to a YouTube video where Richard Dawkins was asked to explain the origin of genetic information according to Darwinism. As you will hear in the audio clip from the video, Dawkins took nearly 11 seconds to reply to the question and then gave an irrelevant answer about the alleged fish-to-amphibian transition.
Can you give an example of a genetic mutation or an evolutionary process which can be seen to increase the information in the genome?
Can you just stop while I think?
I'm recording.
Okay. There's a popular misunderstanding of evolution which says that fish turned into reptiles and reptiles turned into mammals, and so somehow we ought to be able to look around the world today and look at our ancestors. We ought to be able to see the intermediates between fish and reptiles or between reptiles and mammals. We ought to be able to see fish kind of on the way to becoming reptiles. But of course, that's not the way it is at all. Fish are modern animals. They're just as modern as we are. They're descended from ancestors, which we're descended from. Way back 300 million years ago, there would have been an ancestor, which was the ancestor of modern fish and the ancestor of modern humans. And that ancestor, if you could have been there then, you could have seen the first steps towards a fish, say, coming out onto the land and becoming something like an amphibian. But that was a long time ago. You wouldn't expect to see that today. And so quite a lot of the misunderstanding of evolution, I suppose, stems from the fact that people are looking at modern animals and thinking that Darwin has said we're descended from them. Well, we're not. We're not descended from modern fish. We're not descended from modern monkeys. We're not descended from modern apes. They are modern animals just as we are. They're our cousins. They're not our ancestors.
The question posed to Dawkins was, can you give an example of a genetic mutation or other evolutionary process that can be seen to increase the information in the genome? I also posted a link to Dawkins' rebuttal to the video, where he purports to explain the origin of genetic information according to Darwinian evolution. In the rebuttal, Dawkins comments that the question was, quote, the kind of question only a creationist would ask, unquote. And Dawkins writes that, quote, in my anger, I refused to discuss the question further and told him to stop the camera, unquote. But let's assess Dawkins' answer to the information challenge. We must first ask, what type of information is relevant here? Dawkins writes, quote, first you have to explain the technical meaning of information, unquote. While that sounds reasonable, Dawkins then pulls a bait and switch and defines information as Shannon information, a formulation of information that applies to signal transmission and does not account for the type of specified complexity found in biology. It is common for Darwinists to define information as Shannon information, which is related to calculating the mere unlikelihood of a sequence of events. Under such a definition, a functionalist stretch of genetic junk might have the same amount of information as a fully functional gene of the same sequence length. ID proponents don't see this as a useful way of measuring biological complexity. In contrast, ID proponents define information as complex and specified information. Stephen C. Meyer writes that ID theorists use, quote, CSI as a synonym for specified complexity to help distinguish biological information from mere Shannon information, that is, specified complexity from mere complexity, unquote. As the Encyclopedia of the International Society for Complexity Information Design states, quote, unlike specified complexity, Shannon information is solely concerned with the improbability or complexity of a string of characters, rather than its patterning or significance, unquote. The inconvenient truth for Dawkins is that the difference between the Darwinist and ID definitions of information is equivalent to the difference between getting 10 consecutive losing hands in a poker game versus getting 10 consecutive royal flushes. One implicates design while the other does not. It is important to note that ID proponents did not invent the notion of specified complexity, nor were they the first to observe that specified complexity is the best way to describe biological information. My first knowledge of the term being used was in 1973 when leading origin of life theorist Leslie Orgel used it in a fashion that closely resembles the modern usage by ID proponents. Orgel stated, quote, Living organisms are distinguished by their specified complexity. Crystals are usually taken as a prototype of simple, well-specified structures because they consist of a very large number of identical molecules packed together in a uniform way. Lumps of granite or random mixtures of polymers are examples of structures which are complex but not specified. The crystals fail to qualify as living because they lack complexity. The mixtures of polymers fail to qualify because they lack specificity. Unquote. Dr. Argel thus captures the fact that specified complexity requires both order and a specific arrangement of parts or symbols. This matches the definition given by Dembski, where he defines specified complexity as an unlikely event that conforms to an independent pattern. This establishes that specified complexity is the appropriate measure of biological complexity. But Shannon information is an irrelevant measure of biological complexity when one is trying to understand the information generative power of Darwinian evolution. Richard Dawkins' main point in his article is that, quote, new genes arise through various kinds of duplication, unquote. So his answer to the question that so upset him is gene duplication. Yet during the actual gene duplication process, a pre-existing gene is merely copied and nothing new is truly generated. As Michael Agnor wrote in response to P.Z. Myers, quote, gene duplication is presumably not to be taken too seriously. If you count copies as new information, you must have a hard time with plagiarism in your classes. All that miscreant students would have to say is, quote, it's just like gene duplication, plagiarism is new information, you said so on your blog, unquote. The problem is that duplicating genes does not increase biological information in any important sense. To show this, I will now pose two questions to Darwinists who claim that the mechanism of gene duplication explains how Darwinian evolutionary processes can increase the information content in the genome. The first question is, does gene duplication increase the information content in the genome? And two, does gene duplication increase the information content in the genome? Asking this question twice obviously does not double the meaningful information conveyed by the question. How many times would the question have to be duplicated before the meaningful information content conveyed by the list of duplicated questions is twice that of the original question? The answer is that the mere duplication of a sentence does not increase the complex and specified content in any meaningful way. For example, imagine that a builder of a house has a blueprint to build a new house, but the blueprint does not contain enough information to build the house according to the specifications that the builder desires. Could the builder obtain the needed information merely by photocopying the original blueprint? Of course not. The Darwinist would probably reply to my objection saying, isn't just gene duplication that increases the genetic content of the genome? Such information is increased when gene duplication is coupled with the subsequent evolution of one of the new copies of the gene. Well, that's the rub. Darwinists laud the mechanism of gene duplication because they claim it shows one copy of a gene can perform the original function, freeing up the other copy to mutate freely, evolve, and acquire a new function. But the new genetic information must somehow be generated during the subsequent evolution of the gene. To explain how Darwinian processes can generate new and meaningful genetic information, Darwinists must provide a detailed account of how a duplicate copy of a gene can evolve into an entirely new gene. But ask Darwinists for details as to how the duplicate copy then starts to perform some new function and you probably won't get any. At least Dawkins didn't give us any details in his article. A recent study in Nature admitted, quote, gene duplication loss is a powerful source of functional innovation. However, the general principles that govern this process are still largely unknown, unquote. Yet the crucial question that must be answered by the gene duplication mechanism is how exactly does the duplicate copy acquire an entirely new function? Stephen Meyer explains in the Proceedings of the Biological Society of Washington that it is difficult to imagine how duplicated genes acquire new functions since they must successfully undergo neutral evolution and essentially traverse a random walk in order to acquire a new function. Meyer writes, quote, Neo-Darwinists envision new genetic information arising from those sections of the genetic text that can presumably vary freely without consequence to the organism. According to this scenario, non-coding sections of the genome or duplicated sections of coding regions can experience a protracted period of neutral evolution, during which alterations in nucleotide sequences have no discernible effect on the function of the organism. Eventually, however, a new gene sequence will arise that can code for a novel protein. At that point, natural selection can favor the new gene and its functional protein product, thus securing the preservation and heritability of both. This scenario has the advantage of allowing the genome to vary through many generations as mutations search the space of possible base sequences. The scenario has an overriding problem, however. The size of the combinatorial space, i.e. the number of possible amino acid sequences, and the extreme rarity and isolation of the functional sequences within that space of possibilities. Since natural selection can do nothing to help generate new functional sequences, but rather can only preserve such sequences once they have arisen, chance alone, random variation, must do the work of information generation, that is, of finding exceedingly rare functional sequences within the set of combinatorial possibilities. Yet the probability of randomly assembling or finding in the previous sense a functional sequence is very small, unquote. The inconvenient truth for Dawkins is that at best, the mechanism of gene duplication shows how a hiker can get to the foot of a hiking trail, but never explains how the hiker finds the peak of the mountain while doing a random, blindfolded walk. We don't need to know that genes can make copies of themselves. We need to know how the duplicate gene evolves step by step into an entirely new gene. Dawkins also makes another crucial error by mistaking sequence similarity as evidence for common descent and then mistaking evidence for common descent as evidence for Darwinian evolution. Rather than giving a step-by-step mutational account of how a duplicated gene acquires a new function, Dawkins' article substitutes bland evidence of sequence identity between different genes as evidence for Darwinian evolution by gene duplication. In particular, Dawkins gives the example of the evolution of various globin genes that he claims arose via gene duplication. His evidence is that, quote, careful letter-by-letter analysis shows that these different kinds of globin genes are literally cousins of each other, literally members of a family, unquote. Of course, the careful letter-by-letter analysis simply means finding amino acid sequences that are similar or identical between two different proteins. In his book Evolution Under the Microscope, published in 2002 by Leiden Academic Press, David Swift explains that such claims of relationship, quote, are inferred solely on the basis of assuming a common ancestry and then deriving a route of polypeptide evolution, typically the most parsimonious one, to fit the known present-day amino acid sequences consistent with the observed pattern of amino acids, unquote. At best, such sequence identity demonstrates common ancestry if one ignores the possibility of common design, but it does not demonstrate Darwinian evolution. Michael Behe easily rebutted the over-extrapolation from sequence similarity to Darwinian evolution in both Darwin's Black Box and The Edge of Evolution, where Behe states, quote, comparing sequences cannot show us how a complex biochemical system achieved its function. By way of analogy, the instruction manuals for two different models of computers put out by the same company might have many identical words, sentences, and even paragraphs suggesting a common ancestry. Perhaps the same author wrote both manuals. But comparing the sequences of letters in the instruction manuals will never tell us if a computer can be produced step by step starting from a typewriter. Unquote. And quote, modern Darwinists point to evidence of common descent and erroneously assume it to be evidence of the power of random mutation. Unquote. Darwinists like Dawkins continue to make the mistake cited by Behe and Swift. The problem is that duplicated genes face a dangerous road. As Lynch and Connery found, quote, the vast majority of gene duplications are silenced within a few million years, unquote. Does Richard Dawkins give a step-by-step mutational account of how globin genes evolved from one another while remaining functional at all times, such that the duplicate copies were never silenced, terminating their evolution? Of course not. Dawkins has not demonstrated how Darwinian evolution can take a duplicated gene and evolve it into a new gene. The problem for Dawkins is that duplicating a gene may increase your amount of Shannon information, but it does not increase the amount of specified complexity in any non-trivial sense. To explain how one gene can turn into another, Dawkins must explain how new specified and complex information can enter the genome and give a step-by-step mutational account of the origin of some gene via gene duplication. But Dawkins provided none of this. To understand my point, consider the following sentence. Methinks Dawkins doth protest too much. If we merely consider the Shannon information of the 33 letters, not counting spaces in that sentence, then it has about 155 bits of Shannon information. Now we duplicate it, like what happens in a gene duplication event. So it reads, methinks Dawkins doth protest too much. Methinks Dawkins doth protest too much. The amount of Shannon information has now doubled to be approximately 310 bits. But we have seen no non-trivial increase in the amount of specified complexity. Yet Dawkins thinks that gene duplication is the answer, and that, quote, it is by these and similar means that genome sizes can increase in evolution, unquote. But we aren't trying to simply change the, quote, genome size, unquote, and thereby change the Shannon information. We're trying to construct something functionally new. Thus imagine that one duplicate copy of the original sentence evolves into a new sentence of the same length. This sentence now reads, but I'm sure Dawkins believes he's right. A Darwinian theorist would find that both sentences contain the word Dawkins and share a 21% sequence identity. They would then infer that both sequences evolved from a common ancestor via Darwinian evolution. They would conclude that a duplicated version of the sentence, methinks Dawkins doth protest too much, has evolved into, but I'm sure Dawkins believes he is right. David Swift explains that finding such similarities is not enough to justify the claim that Darwinian evolution has produced the observed patterns, stating, quote, for family trees to be credible, most if not all of the putative ancestral sequences must be functional. But this presents a major stumbling block in the production by divergence of proteins with different functions. To get from one set of conserved amino acids to another is either an unlikely big jump or the intermediates must have biological activity, but the latter seems unlikely because it contradicts what we know about conserved amino acids, unquote. Thus, in order for Darwinists to convince me that Darwinian evolution can produce new information, at minimum, I need something like a step-by-step mutational account of how they can take the sentence, methinks Dawkins doth protest too much, and evolve it into a sentence of the same length, perhaps but I'm sure Dawkins believes he is right. This evolutionary change must change the first sentence one letter at a time, having it always retain some comprehensible English meaning along each small step of its evolution. Telling me that you can duplicate one sentence does not answer the question posed in the video. Can you give an example of genetic mutation or evolutionary process that can be seen to increase the information in the genome? It's worth noting that Dawkins finally claims that it is natural selection that, quote, feeds information into gene pools, unquote, by selecting for mutations that help organisms survive. Thus, Dawkins would argue that the information in the environment is transferred into the genome of the organism. Fair enough, but Dawkins is not telling the most important part of the story. We all know that mutations must provide the raw fuel upon which natural selection can act. As Gilbert, Opitz, and Ralph write, quote, the modern synthesis is a remarkable achievement. However, starting in the 1970s, many biologists began questioning its adequacy in explaining evolution. Genetics might be adequate for explaining microevolution, but microevolutionary changes in gene frequency were not seen as able to turn a reptile into a mammal or convert a fish into an amphibian. Microevolution looks at adaptations that concern only the survival of the fittest, not the arrival of the fittest. As Goodwin points out, the origin of species, Darwin's problem remains unsolved, unquote. Thus, natural selection can, given the right population circumstances, preserve traits that confer a survival advantage onto an organism, and it is very effective at weeding out traits that are disadvantageous. But natural selection can only act upon what mutations provide. Thus, we can't account for the survival of particular mutations until we account for the arrival of particular mutations. We cannot account for the increase in information content of genomes until we consider how random mutations produce the raw fuel for natural selection to preserve. So here is my information challenge reiterated. For the sake of argument, I will grant that every stage of the evolutionary pathway I requested will survive, and thus I'll give natural selection every possible benefit of the doubt. What I need is a step-by-step mutational account of how one sentence evolved into the other, wherein the sentence remains functional, i.e. it has a comprehensible English meaning, at all stages of its evolution. In short, I request to see how a sentence like, "Methinks Dawkins doth protest too much," can evolve into, "But I'm sure Dawkins believes he is right," by changing the first sentence one letter at a time and having it always retain some comprehensible English meaning along each small step of its evolution. This seems like a reasonable request, as it is not highly different from what Darwinists are telling me can happen in nature. How would Dawkins reply? Would he get angry and complain that this is the kind of question only a creationist would ask? Personally, I'd like to see an answer to the question. This is Casey Luskin with the Idea of the Future podcast signing off. Thanks for listening.
Music on ID the Future comes courtesy of composer Yuri Mamchur. Visit www.yuriproductions.com and check out his latest CD, In the Harbor. This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. Discovery president is Bruce Chapman. ID the Future managing editor is Robert Crowther. And the producer is Keith Finn. ID the Future and ID Science in the News is copyright Discovery Institute 2006. For more information, visit www.discovery.org or www.idthefuture.com.